I'm curious about the physics of the image, how it could be made. I mean, those are not body fluids on that cloth. If so, how could they be preserved for so long and still be visible? What is your theory, Dr. Hertak, J.J. Hertak, to begin with, about how this image was made?
Well, let me go back to the original words of Genesis. The image on the cloth, I believe, is in the actual words that the divine image was imprinted upon the human experiment. In the Hebrew, Beit Tzelemenu Kidd Mufeinu means image and similitude, which means there is a supporting energy field that goes with the image itself. In the Latin, ad imago et similitudo means that progressive evolution is there in the human image, regardless of the Jesus figure or whether this was that of Abraham or any one of the illustrious patriarchs. But Desiree and I have looked at this very extensively from the leading chemist and specialist. So Desiree, why don't you take it from the top?
Right. So if you look at linen back in those days, they actually washed it or used, when they were making it, they used a starch in making it. And then they washed the cloth a little bit with something called a soapwort plant. Now, what happened is where the coloration is on the shroud is not actually on the linen. It's on the starch. This is so thin. I mean, I can't even tell you how thin it is. It's basically microscopic. And it's not, when you see the darker images, you're actually seeing more of the starch. This is a layer over these very, very, very thin threads of flax being colored. That's what you're seeing. So it's not the flax itself being colored, it's the starch layer. It's kind of like a coating. It's almost invisible, and it can be picked up even with a piece of a sticky tape.
These fibers are 15 microns compared to the human hair, which is generally 100 microns.
Yeah, well, that's the size of the flax. So the size of the starch on it is actually even much smaller. So we're talking microscopic starch has been changed on the linen. Now, Ray Rogers, who's the thermal chemist from the original SERP team, felt that something happened with the amines in the body. These are, when you die, there's these, actually something called cadaverine and putrescine that comes out of the body. And this might have mixed with the sugar starch, which is what starch is. It's like a sugar. And discolored the starch layers on the shroud. Now, there's a second theory, which we tend to side with a little bit more. In fact, one of the men who had worked with Ray Rogers on this, his last name is Fonti, he's in Italy, is now working with another scientist in Italy called Pablo De Lazzaro, and they are using ultraviolet excimer laser. Actually, it's an argon fluoride laser. And they are able, with this laser, to simply color, and this is the hardest thing, how do you color this little microscopic starch on top of the layer? And with this laser light, ultraviolet, they are able to do this. This, we think, is absolutely fantastic because no one else has been able to figure out exactly how this starch could be colored.
Well, I don't recall reading anything about argon fluoride lasers being around 2,000 years ago, so how was it made back then?
It was this is a natural process through which things take place in terms of a very, very special area of radiation. In other words, this is something that is not based upon heavy-duty technology that was around. It's something that was there in the whole process of change in terms of the biochemistry.
Ryan, this is where we can get a little bit more far out, hopefully, in the second hour.
Let's go right now. Let's get far out right now.
Well, the idea is we have an electromagnetic spectrum. On one side, you have really longer wavelengths. That's the infrared. Then you have the visible from 400 to 750 nanometers. And then you get into the faster frequencies, the more intense frequencies, and that's the ultraviolet. And then after that, you have X-ray. Now, if you look at an X-ray, I mean, how do we get a really good image of the body if you look at science today? You have to take an X-ray. When you take an X-ray, you get really good details. We know that X-rays are really dangerous. What's between the visible and the X-ray, the ultraviolet? So there's a slight chance if Jesus was moving from, we'll say, a physical matter body and moving into a higher frequency, you would have to go through the ultraviolet wavelengths. And actually, Dr. Hertak, in the 1970s, talked about this in one of his books that he wrote, The Keys of Enoch, that to cross out of this dimension into the next dimension, you actually use ultraviolet frequencies. And this seems to be at least what De Lazzaro, which has nothing to do with us, we've never met the man, has been working with two frequencies for those of you who are interested. It's a 308 nanometer and a 193 nanometer laser, excimer laser.
So excimer lasers, as many know, are used for eye surgery, for very delicate semiconductors. I mean, there's a whole area of how this wavelength area is so important, from 126 nanometers all the way up to 337 nanometers, thereabouts. This is a very exciting area that has come to light by ongoing research, suggesting that there's a very narrow set of duration intensities, wavelength values, that have played a very important role in the formation of the body image we see in the shroud. Now, that's just part of the new story. Added to this, of course, is the modeling that's going on from another set of researchers. These are researchers connected with the work of what we referred to earlier in our conversation, Petra Soons, who's been able to create a holographic or hologram of the whole shroud itself by taking the images of a gentleman by the name of Giuseppe Andrii back in 1931 with the work of Barry Schwartz, the very gifted photographer of the original Stirp group back in 1978. Putting these images together, he was able to digitize and convert from a two-dimensional field to a three-dimensional field.
Yeah, I saw this on a TV show, right? There was a three-dimensional image of what the figure looked like.
Right.
And that just shows you how much information is in the shroud. I mean, he did take the pictures, and he made actually 600 or 625, I believe it was, pictures from those individual images to get the three-dimensional effect. But still, the intensity of the information in the original picture, this is where they don't think that the vapor theory, or what I was mentioning earlier, this Maillard, where you change the amines and the starch interact, could actually create the detail in such a small layer of just the starch, not the fabric, to make these images. So it has to be almost, like I said, the light. It has to be some sort of energy burst that is able to make such a fine detail. Also, the fact that there is as much energy on the back of the shroud or the image as on the front, it makes it look like the person was actually hovering in between the shroud, because there's otherwise it would be more intense on the back or more intense on the front. It was actually equal on both sides.
So the master hologram he created really shows details on the feet, on the head itself, on even he picked up images of flowers around the face, details that were not normally apparent or available in terms of technology, the VP8 and others that JPL people used back in 1977-78. A whole new chapter has been opened by Soons and his colleagues, which is very striking, because he claims, in addition to the details of the face, that he has seen three Hebrew letters over the throat area of the quote-unquote Jesus figure. This is very important, and he's published this in his book pretty much on the same topic, but he goes into great linguistic detail of these three letters, which in Hebrew would be the Tzadeh, the Aleph, and the Vav, which means very little to the average audience, except if you have a dictionary of ancient biblical language.
Which
I do, and having studied this era, I can simply say the expression is, he believes, from the Hebrew word yatsa, which means to go out or to call forth or to exit from the body. This is a matter of great linguistic debate.